Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, folks, it's Mark Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Mark.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Maron to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Maron at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
We recorded this big interview with Alec McLeish live during the IRIGHT Book Festival in Glasgow, and in part two we leaf through the chapter of his management career which is marked player recruitment. We learn how close Alec came to bringing a certain Andres Iniesta to Rangers on loan and the repercussions that his inquiry had at the Camp Nou. Alec also explains how he was urged by his sons to sign a very young Lionel Messi after they discovered the teenage prodigy while they were playing Football Manager. Alec's time in charge at Ibrox taught him a huge amount about signing players, something which he didn't find easy to achieve at Birmingham City, where he worked under owners who required sugar when it came to agreeing transfers. Alec also reveals his passion for film, from sneaking into a cinema to watch Clockwork Orange at the age of 12, to being invited by Irvin Welsh to attend the world premiere of Trainspotting 2. Choose life. Choose to listen to this big interview. See you on the other side.
Can I tease you with a serious question? Because there's a man in the room, Graham Rance, who knows, and I told you that I got the hairdryer treatment for Sir Alex deservedly before any of the Manchester United players did in 1982 in the World Cup, because I ventured that maybe it'd be a good idea to play Jim Leighton instead of Alan Ruff, but I phrased it badly by saying, what the fuck is Jock Stein doing playing there? And he, in the middle of the hotel, rounded on me and savaged me in public. Don't you... Aside from the use of vocabulary or the temper, having played for both men and knowing that Jock Stein was revered for Sir Alex, that he influenced him,
yeah,
would you draw any comparisons between the two of them, or which comparisons would you draw?
Well, when I worked with Jock Stein as a young Scotland player, you know, I was in awe of the guy, just the guy's presence walking into a room. And these were his latter days as a coach, as a manager, and you know, the thing that I really learned from Jock was he was an artist of common sense, and that's what he'd become, you know. And it was, there was nothing that he really said that was mind-boggling, but just the simple things. When I got my debut for Scotland, I was playing in midfield and against Portugal, and I'm saying, well, my preparation for this game, this is going to be tough, playing in front of the full Hampden crowd, all my friends, parents and that, you know, so I was feeling the nerves. And I said, then the fact that I'm playing for Scotland, I'm going to have to do a Cruyff turn or something like that, you know, or a Ronaldo step over, so that I can prove that I'm an international player. And Jock took me aside before the game. He says, the reason you're in this Scotland squad and in this team tonight is because of what you've been doing for Aberdeen. Just do the same thing. And, you know, the penny dropped and it sounded so simple. I thought, sure, I don't have to do a Cruyff turn.
Do you think he'd seen that the nerves were getting to you and that you might try to...
I don't think so. I don't think so, but...
He just knew that a young player needs to be told, do the right things.
Yeah, I think it was just a pure act of common sense. And, you know, I sailed through the game, made a goal for Andy Gray, and had a good debut for Scotland. And, you know, that common sense thing, a very small detail, but so important.
I introduced you here as somebody who won the last treble at Rangers. You were the manager to win the last treble at Rangers. It was a very, very successful spell for you. And there were ups and downs. One of the things that sticks in everybody's memories, I was away, so I have to admit, I saw it and understood it less than I would normally have done. But this build-up to Helicopter Sunday and why that league was so difficult and what the again, this fight back, overhauling something, mm-hmm. Barcelona, Aberdeen. When you could see the tape and the tape looked far away, what was the process for you as a Rangers manager? What were you telling yourself? What were you telling your players? What were you drawing from Jock and Sir Alex Ferguson to try and teach them about what you learned as a footballer?
Well, I mentioned it earlier, resilience, and never, ever giving up to the final whistle. All week we said, look, guys, what we cannot do is not beat Hibs. If we don't win this game and Celtic somehow slip up, you'll regret it for the rest of your life. It was that important. And again, we kind of brainwashed them with that. And at half-time, you know, big Marvin Andrews was going to boot with T-shirts. He was a big godly person and he's given it believe and all that, you know. So he was shouting believe in the dressing room. And so everybody's got their own little kind of, you know, mantra to try and stir things up. But they come in at half-time, we're 1-0. It's 0-0. Celtic are 1-0 up at Motherwell, so the league is theirs. And that was what I saw in my players' body language as well. They thought the league was theirs as well, except Big Marvin, who was still shouting, believe! But I saw Barry, you know, I'm looking at Barry and I'm saying, come on, you're skipper, you're going to have to help me here. And we have to remember that if you score one goal and Muller will score a goal, you've won the league. Make sure you win this game. If Celtic still keep their lead, then you've done everything you could by winning. And we just were relentless in the second half, trying to get it, go for, you know, so Barry's up again, he's going, all right, aye. He was sitting slumped, you know, and then all of a sudden, when I pulled him privately, I said, get in there and get that chest out and get into them all. And he was back in, oh, come on, we're going to win this. And, you know, it rallies people. You get people that inspire you. And you know, Barry was good for that with the lads.
Do certain players, however good they are, fold or lack a real tungsten, hard winning mentality? I mean, not just that day, I'm not talking about that dressing room. Have you seen players around you that just don't have that? They need to be coaxed into being believers.
Yeah, part of it is when you're a leader is trying to give people confidence. Now, you can't say to somebody, have confidence. You know, how do you go about that as a coach? Well, you know, I like to use the modern day sciences like video technology and show a player the evidence of what he's done, things he's done well. And obviously something you have to show them the other things is the, you know, the bad times as well and be constructive, but mostly it's evidence to show him what he's doing well, to give him that feel good factor. And then of course on the training field, the practice of a particular.
So the players that we're talking about now wouldn't, but to a man, have seen you and go, I'm inspired because I've seen what our manager used to do.
Yeah.
It's all down to what you convince them to do, how you teach them, what confidence your words imbue them with. Is that right?
You have to. Obviously, you have to judge the players' mentalities. You know, you have to check if a guy is going to be of your, you know, an extension of you, you like.
Yeah, great phrase.
And you know, you quickly suss that out. And if you're recruiting, then you're going to try and recruit players.
Now that's in the wrong order, because you're right, you quickly suss that out. But in your ideal world, I know, because we've often talked to our players.
Yeah.
You try and find that out in advance, but it's very, very difficult. Mm-hmm. And if you're finding out if they're an extension of you and if you've got the right mentality once they're in the club,
yeah,
then what you're doing is trying to prop it back up again if it's not the right mentality.
Well, that's right, and it's really difficult to... You know, you say you've seen some great players, but you've seen some great players coming to Rangers and Celtic over the years, and they haven't been quite able to do it because of mentality. You know, Basil Boley won the European Cup with Marseille, signed for Rangers as a free agent or something in the summer, and he was a failure. You know, at Rangers, he just couldn't handle the whole concept of Rangers. You know, Rangers-Celtic, they're in a band of clubs in the world who are quite unique, you know, in that they have to win every week. They have to win every week. Now, for you to have a mentality, I know a lot of the Rangers guys who have come this last couple of seasons were good enough to get them out of that division. Now, their mentality is being tested because once you get a couple of bad results and the crowd starts on you, do they crumble or do they come to the fore? That's when you find out about mentalities and when there's a bit of adversity.
So recruitment is in order to
vital. Recruitment
and the fine tuning of recruitment, the quality of the information, irrespective of identifying the right talents. Mm-hmm. Now, well, there's an opportunity because the big games that I liked of yours in England, I remember that you were dedicated at some stage in your career to prove yourself in England, mm-hmm. which you went and did because I said in the intro it's about the first Birmingham Trophy in about, I don't know, 1,000 years, whatever it was. But to get to that final where you defeated Arsenal, you had to stage another huge fight back against West Ham. I want to know how those two legs went, how things played out. But it's my impression that you weren't totally in control of all the recruitment at that stage in that club. A difficult club. Who were you being managed by? You had to manage upwards in that club, didn't you?
Well, there was, you know, what you call, you have to give the directors a bit of sugar, you know, and to get what you want. You know, I was Nikola Zigic, for instance, a big, giant Serbian player who scored for me in that final, us in that final. I was speaking to Steve Archibald, who was in Barcelona, and Steve was talking about giving him a loan. But then the Chinese owners said that they were going to buy him, and I thought it was a lot of money for the club, and he's untested for the English Premier, and it might take him a while to settle. But they insisted in buying him, but they promised, and this is the bit of sugar. I give them a bit of sugar, hoping that they can give me a couple of players that I wanted. And I was looking at a little Italian, a kind of poor man, Sergio Aguero, Fabrizio Miccoli, remember him?
Super player.
Fantastic little player. And Bobby Zamora was available as well. So these were my two in the hit list. Bobby was on fire at the time.
Proven goal scorer.
And but we didn't get them. But anyway, but going back to the West.
See, my point about Zigic is I remember us talking a lot about Zigic, and I remember you didn't want to launch everything.
Well,
into him.
I think I spoke to you a couple of times and asking you how he's doing in Spain.
Because he's got the football, he's got the height, the physique, but I know he wasn't what you were talking about before. An extension of you. He didn't have the right personality. And the goal still stands on his record and your record. But that wasn't the right type of footballer for that club.
But you know what was interesting was I tried to try and find another strength for him to flourish in England, and he went on a scoring run. But after the cup final, he never played another game. He was done in with his groin. He would have scored another two or three goals, I'm sure of that. But getting the picture, I tried to get him. Look, Nicola, don't come to the ball, build up. We don't really have the players for that. You're a giant of a man. You should be causing havoc in that box. So we tried to, speeded up the tempo. Mm-hmm. We said, tempo's got to be high, guys. We've got to get crosses in the box for Zigic. I showed him Peter Crouch videos with Big Crouchy, far post. You know, basic, but bloody effective. And he scored the winner in a game at West Ham. He scored the winner at home to Stoke. He scored the winner against Aston Villa in the League Cup. So he was coming really good. And of course, he scored in the final. I never had a player, a centre forward of the calibre that I did when I was at Rangers, in the sense that I had with Ronald de Boer. De Boer was a brilliant linker of the play. But Big Ziggich wanted to come to the ball. I said, no, no, don't come to the ball. Stay away in the box. They're shit scared of you in there. And that was the case. And it was, you know, it's common sense. You know, I think I'm a better coach now than I was when I started with Rangers. But sometimes, again, difficult to get an opportunity again at the highest level.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
So let's go back to that semi-final that wins you the trophy at Wembley against Arsene Wenger. It's one of the great shocks of English football in modern history, Birmingham beating Arsenal. But to get there, you had to overturn a solid West Ham side and a solid West Ham lead from the first leg. What was the mentality of a Birmingham side that wasn't used to triumphs, that wasn't used to beating the big clubs? It's Midlands against the fancy Southerners. The first leg is 2-0 West Ham.
2-1 West Ham.
2-1 West Ham.
And we get to St Andrews, and in the first half, West Ham score. So they're 3-1 up in aggregate, and it was a really tepid performance from us in the first half. I had a smaller striker up. I thought he could be too speedy for West Ham defence, Matt Derbyshire. But as soon as the half-time whistle went, I said, I've got to make an instant change. And I took Matt off, and Ziggich was on the bench. And he went on and he caused havoc. And we beat West Ham 3-1. And Craig Gardner scored a couple of goals, but feeding off of Ziggich, you know. And we absolutely battered them, steamrolled them in the second half with some really fast attacking football.
And my memory was that the crowd rise to you then. Because
the crowd were amazing, yeah. And you know, of course, every time I went out as a player, we used to say, we've got to get the crowd going, you know. So that's what it's all about. And how do you get the crowd going? By playing good football, by playing an exciting brand of football that they're going to appreciate. And that's what we did in that second half. And they, you know, every one of them on their feet.
So you knock them out and you go to Wembley and it's Arsene Wenger and it's Arsenal. It shouldn't necessarily be a winnable game.
Oh, no, I don't know what the odds were. Must have been about 100 to 1 or something.
How'd you plan a game like that? What did you think? This is what we can do to them. There are their weak points. What did you tell the players? Yeah. What was the technical side of...
That was a really good working week for us. There was no distraction of a midweek game or anything, so we had a full week of working, and I worked with the defence separately. I worked with the midfield, and we worked with the forwards in different... A lot of it was discipline against the ball, because we knew what Arsenal could do. So we had to be organised both in attack and in defending, but definitely in defending, because Arsenal had the flying fullbacks, with the wingers going inside. So tactically, we had to be spot on, but the players had to all buy into it, and they had to give every bit of concentration they had for the entire game, and also the energy levels as well.
So your great role all week isn't just the strategy, it's to imbue them with the belief that they can do this.
Yeah, and it was also, you know, as I said, that practical stuff, we brought it up, we got the defence, midfield and attackers together for practice on Thursday. They were working separately, and it really worked a treat, you know, because we could get every individual knowing exactly what he was going to be doing, and that's the game on the Sunday final.
What was the Wembley factor like? You'd played there, you knew what it was like, but presumably when you hear every English player grunt, they want to be in a final at Wembley, but it can overwhelm you too.
It's a daunting place. It's a daunting place to go into. The first time I've played there was for Scotland in 1981. We beat England 1-0. And you know, I'd never been in such an energy sapping pitch in my life before. And the soles of my feet were red raw with blisters, and you know, it wasn't new boots or anything. It was just
partly because they did Horse of the Year show, and the pitch was chopped up absolutely everywhere, wasn't it?
Yeah,
because this is the game when
it wasn't the pitch that it is nowadays. But
Steve Archibald goes down for the penalty, and
but even the arena, and it's not the arena it is now, but it was still you know, a daunting place, and again it is kind of energy sapping, you know, when you've got the opposition. But fortunately, we had about 60,000 Scots there in the crowd. But that game, and then going to Wembley with Birmingham and winning in the new Wembley against Arsenal was just one of the greatest achievements in my career.
Obafemi Martins, how the hell did he end up playing for Birmingham? Wonder kid at Inter Milan.
Aye.
Unbelievably talented footballer. He gets your first goal that day, right?
He get the winner.
Winning goal.
He get the winner. Big Zigic. You know, it's interesting enough. And again, this is the fine detail. Before the game, I went into the wee anteroom with the video analyst and Zigic. And at Aston Villa a few weeks before, we drew one each at St Andrews. And Zigic had a real good chance in the last minute of the game when he went up against the goalkeeper. But I noticed he kind of did the tortoise with the neck, you know. He withdrew it. And I said, listen, you keep that head extended, you know, and you're going to beat goalkeepers even. And I showed him the video of that before that game. And then the corner we worked on, Roger Johnson, the edge of the box, headed it goalwards, and Zigic goes up with the goalie and he's stretched the neck, you know. And I'm saying, unbelievable. I felt so, you know, so happy that I'd actually showed him that before the game. You know, you imagine sometimes you might skip over it and say, I'm not going to bother. You know, he should be able to do it himself. But you gap fine detail. What makes the big difference?
So I mentioned Obafemi Martins as a little bridge towards small players of talent.
Small and quick, yeah.
Small and quick.
You were a goal as well.
You mentioned John. I knew that you caused havoc at Barcelona by, as Rangers manager, trying to sign, first of all, Leo Messi, and then that sort of transmogrified into Andres Iniesta.
I wish.
He might have got a game every now and again, I suppose. tell me about how it happens, because John, your son, is involved in giving you priceless information, recruitment information.
John and Jamie were into that Championship Manager, and young fellas in here will know what it is. And he was constantly giving me names in South America, and then, you know, they come up. This guy, Leo Messi, is going to be the best player in the world. I don't, he was 13 or 14 maybe at the time. And you kind of dismiss it, you know. But then when it came to the Rangers and we were downsizing, we were looking for new players, quality, to try. I needed somebody with some quality in midfield. Barry Ferguson, I think, had gone down to Blackburn. So we'd lost a guy who would have taken the ball in any stadium anywhere in the world. We needed players of that ilk again. And Messi, we were told flatly, no chance. Jan Wouters said, I'll phone Tencat.
Henk Tencat, yeah.
Henk Tencat was the assistant of Frank Rijkaard, the big Dutch, ex-Dutch international. And Jan Wouters phoned him and said, with Messi, no chance. Absolutely no chance. And anybody, and he said, look, we've got a young kid, Iniesta, and he's a phenomenal player. He was only, would it be 18, 19?
Just, yeah.
And we said, well, can he come to Scotland? And they said, yeah, I'll try and make some hay at Barcelona and get him over to you. He needs to get some action. And Monday, I think, by the Monday, Iniesta was called into the team and he played a stormer. And Tencat came back on a Monday. Hans Jan Wouters said, what about the wee man? Where are we getting him? And he said, he's in the first team squad now.
And that was against Juventus in the pre-season game. And prior to that, what had happened, galvanised by your inquiry, was that the Catalans...
I didn't realise I caused a shitstorm in Barcelona.
There's no question whatsoever about it. The Catalans at the club were saying to the two Dutchmen, Wouters and Rijkaard, we pay you, we stuck by you when the going was bad. Show some bollocks, make a decision. Does he go out on loan or does he stay? And if he stays, play him. And Rijkaard and Wouters were both looking at Chelsea under Mourinho. If possible under Mourinho, every player 6 foot or over. Every player an athlete, a runner. Ability, yes, but physique and athleticism always first. They both thought that that was the future. And now your inquiry came closer than anybody knew at the time. And I think closer than anybody's appreciated since, that Iniesta would have been sent out to you on loan. Which, I suppose, given that Arteta had already come to Rangers under you, yeah, and had Arteta had left Barcelona because he saw in front of him in the number four position in front of the defence, Guardiola and Xavi at that stage. And therefore, there was a context for this. Yeah. It could have happened. It seems, okay, harder to believe now, given that he's become what Xavi says is Spain's greatest player. But you seize them, get the right information, you've got the right connections, and strange, yeah, things can happen in the market.
That's it. You know, the recruitment is really important, and people make a lot of mistakes. And, you know, going in to clubs that some clubs have gone into, they didn't really have a database. I had to put one into Aston Villa, and in the short time I was there, they never had anything, despite having all the tools. You know, they had the Pro Zone, they had Y-Scout, everything. They had the analysts, but there was no database in there. And by the time I left, I'd left them with a couple hundred names, you know. So that for me is very important, you know, in any club, that you have that infrastructure, and especially a club of that magnitude who can afford it, and they really should have had a database.
Change the tone before we go to a question and answer. One of the things I've always loved about you that we share is a total love of cinema. You are involved.
Have you seen La La Land yet? No.
I was in it. I was Ryan Gosling's dance double, sometimes treble. I just think that you and I share an adoration of the cinema and its practices. You know a lot of cinematic people. I just want to start by saying, what the first cinematic impact that you had, you going to the cinema, where, what type of film, what did that moment feel like?
I think I would have to go way back to my childhood with my mum and dad. You know, my dad always bought the box of Maltesers. And I think it was those Magnificent Men in the Flying Machine, something like that, was superb. The first cinematic experience.
Terry Thomas?
Yeah, that,
Tony Curtis.
That was it, and that was kind of hooked. But my mother, my father, my family, a lot of them here, they were all movie buffs, and they always liked to talk about...
Would you go every week?
The big stars. Yeah, we went most weeks when I was growing up, yeah.
And your favourite stars
sneaked
would be?
Sneaked in to see, in 1971 I was, well, what age would I have been then, 12? And somehow I get into the local flea pit to watch Clockwork Orange, which was pretty brutal, you know, for a 12-year-old. But
it would explain some of the tackling under Fergie.
No, that's right. Gave me great inspiration.
I'm in trouble now.
Great inspiration.
And then through the years, who do you follow? Which film stars? Which movies would make your top list?
The
De Niro, presumably.
The Mafia. De Niro, I just loved, you know. And then and Once Upon a Time in America, the Godfather 2 that he was in. And I've always loved De Niro stuff. And recently he's kind of got into kind of comedy stuff. But I love to see our own guys, you know, doing really well.
For example, in this
country. Well, I saw Wee Compston the other night and playing Peter Manuel, the famous Glasgow murderer, and he gave a great performance. Dougray Scott is a great pal who he's a hubby, but a great actor. And guys like Robert Carlyle, Ewan McGregor, you know, our own guys, fantastic.
So what,
the Trainspotting mob.
Such is your influence that when Trainspotting 2 was given a world premiere, you were supposed to be at it.
yes, name dropping here. So I got an invitation through a guy called John Baird, who was the director of Filth, the one that James McAvoy, another brilliant Scottish actor. James McAvoy was in, and John and I quickly established a relationship. He said he worked with Scorsese and Mick Jagger on vinyl. It was one of these, you know, the box set productions, and it was going on for about 12 weeks or something. And he worked in an episode with Scorsese and, as I say, Mick Jagger. And he says, but when he met me, he said, Alec, I'm telling you, there was more chuff meeting you than I was there too. So that wasn't a bad accolade. But then the invitation, John says, look, Irvin's going to send you an invite to T2, the world premiere in Edinburgh. And I thought, oh, you're a beauty. So, you know, I've told Jill, and then she says, no, you can't go. We're going to Morocco the next morning on a 7 o'clock plane from one of the London airports. And I had to phone Irvin and ask him to put it back a wee bit, you know.
Choose life, choose Agadir. So why does Sean Connery always pester you on the phone?
Sean Connery, God. Rangers. David Murray phoned me. I'm in the car and I click the phone on. Hi, Chairman. I've got somebody to speak to you here. And this guy comes on and goes, Alex, Sean Connery here. No, I'm not very good at that, but I says, of course it is. Fuck off. And the phone goes again, and it's David Murray. He says, Alec, you just cut off Sean Connery there. He says, John wants to wish you all the best. And I says, you're taking the piss, Chairman. And it really was Sean, you know. And he come on and he's talking away, and I'm saying, oh, Jesus, this is surreal, you know. I'm talking to Sean Connery here. And he came to one of the games in Prague where he was filming, and he came into the dressing room, very, very friendly with David Murray. But brilliant. He phoned, again, I was living in the Midlands, and we were in Stratford-on-Avon, and I was at lunch with Jill, and I get the phone call, and I hear the voice again. Alec, it's Sean Connery. I says, I know it is you this time, you know. He says, I've done this before, haven't we? And he says, have you got Strachan's number, you know? So
actually, you're quite good at that. Let's try Money Penny.
Yes, Miss Moneypenny, yes. No, Miss Moneypenny, she says to me, James, I think you're cracking. And I says to her, Miss Moneypenny, you're not so bad yourself. So anyway, enough of the jokes. But Sean phoned for Gordon Strachan's number, and as I was reading it out, Gordon's number, I better not give it out, but his number ended in 007. True. And I was killing myself as I was reading it out. I says, Sean, 007, and he's going, you taking the piss.
The Big Interview is produced by Backpage and me, Graham Hunter. The music you always hear, the music that you love, is Beer Jacket. You can keep up with everything that we do within reason. You can enter exclusive competitions and put your questions to our future Big Interview guests by getting on the mailing list at grahamhunter.tv. How many times do I have to tell you? Yes, several thousand of you have done it, but come on, slackers at the back, sign up. That grahamhunter.tv site is also where you can buy the new updated version of my book, Barca, The Making of the Greatest Team in the World. It's my account of the Guardiola era at the Camp Nou. 2008 until 2012, plus Tito, Tata, and Adios Johan Cruyff. It is in all good bookshops now, but it does also make a big difference to all of us who've worked on the project if you choose to buy direct at grahamhunter.tv/books. You'll be sure to get the new edition, and you will be helping us to continue producing independent content. Thanks for listening. Thanks for being there. Without you, this would be fun, but a lot less fun. See you soon.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, folks, it's Mark Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Mark.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.